Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Come on in, pull up a cozy chair, and listen to wonderment as we bring you the most enlightened guests on web radio. I am your hostess with the mostest, Sean Cohen. That's me. A psychic, medium, metaphysician, author of 4 books, teacher of esoteric knowledge for 37 years and counting, which is why I am so proud and honored to bring you the authors and practitioners in the know from the Mind, Body, and Spirit Compendium of Life, as well as experts in divination and holistic healing, fabulous tarot readers, wise and profound astrologers, and even the odd rock star, just for your edification and enlightenment. We've been on hiatus, but we're back in the saddle again and raring to go for our 4th season of Cafe Esoterica Radio, broadcasting to you live every Thursday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and worldwide. So find your time zone and dive in. Want to be part of the show? Please do. Call in on our new number, which is 858-956-3204. Chat in our chat room, which is located at the end of our landing page on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't find it there, just refresh your page and it will appear. Can't catch us live? Not to worry. You can find us on many formats like TuneIn, Podbean, Stitcher, and now Spotify. And you can watch me simultaneously broadcast our show every week live on YouTube. Just go to YouTube.com, put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll see me there live talking to you. So grab your latte, your cappuccino, perhaps a herbal tea, and your best friend, and trip the light fantastic with us once more. And as always, your table is reserved. So come on in.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you to Facebook, and thank you to, I'm trying desperately to get up the YouTube. It's not working. And I'm going to try over here just one more second before I really begin the show, because for some reason there's a problem trying to get them all up on my other. Let's just try quickly, because normally I'm on 3 different things. And if I can do it, here, let's try this now. Go live. Here, go live. I'll just go live on that, hopefully. Let's see what happens. Come on. Here we go. Cafe Esoterica Radio. Sorry, folks. This is how it is with live radio. Sometimes stuff happens. And hold on 1 second and I'll be right with you. Talk amongst yourselves. Oh, that makes me laugh. Okay, there we go. Live, 2, 3, 1, smile for the camera. Okay, I am live now on YouTube. So I'm going to hope that it's also showing up on Facebook, because the camera is in 2 places. Hello, I'm live. Hello, welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio on YouTube. So let's have a look. Let's have a look. Can you guys all see me on... Can you see me? Just say yes in the chat. Mary Kay, Clive, Dominic, Chris Evers, my boss. He's not really my boss, but, you know, I call him that. And Patricia, can you guys see me? If you can, that would be great. Just let me know. Hi, can you see me? Hear me? You'll hear me tapping because, unfortunately, typing, you know, tapping. Right, so I hope everyone on Facebook and on YouTube, if you want to watch me, okay, live on YouTube, just go to cafe, go to youtube.com and type in, there it is, Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll find it'll say live, and you'll see me here, and say hi in the chat. Now, you can also go to blogtalkradio.com/ Cafe Esoterica Radio, and I have yet to put up the chat box, but there it is now coming your way if you're out there listening in Radio Land. And so the chat box is now open in the Blog Talk Radio site, and my guest is lovingly waiting in the queue, you know, so hang on there, Elliot. And let's just go back to. Okay, so Silly, can you hear me? I see people joined. I just want to know if you can hear me. Can you hear me? If you can hear me, just say yes, please. Somebody in the chat on Facebook. The camera is being used both ways, and so is the microphone, so that's why I'm not sure. But anyway, I know it's going to pick up on Blog Talk Radio. Well, I'm going to carry on. If you tuned in, this is I'm Sean Cohen, and I'm your hostess with the mostest. And this is Cafe Esoterica Radio. And it's Thursday, August 29th. It's the end of summer. You know, I should have had in my music that song where goodbye to summer. But I have better music. I have a great guest. We're going to talk about him in 1 second, and I'm going to bring him up. Let me talk first about show news. First of all, I'd like to dedicate this show to a wonderful woman who I grew up knowing, and so did my guests, funnily enough. Now, Elliot and I have never met. He contacted me, wanted to be a guest on the show, and his story is extraordinary and wonderful, so therefore, of course, yes, I put him on. We only realized recently he was the cantor at a synagogue that I attended in my youth. And he was the junior cantor. So he said to me, I wasn't a cantor, I was a junior cantor. So, and he became a cantor out where he lives, I think in Arizona. I hope I have that right. He'll correct me, okay, when he comes on the show. But the lovely woman who was like a second mother to me, her name was Mrs. Clarine Karsh. She was the choir director at B'nai Israel in Pittsburgh, PA, on Negley Avenue. And she was a very loving woman. And many, many people remember her fondly. Her daughter, Roberta, was one of my best friends growing up. And, you know, I'm in London because her older sister, Harriet, invited me over here. Robbie and I hitchhiked through Europe together when we were 21 years old, which seems incredible today, but we did it, and we had a blast. And I've just heard, very ironically, I mean, you know, I don't even want to really say this out loud, except that there was their eldest sister Paula just lost her husband, and I was at their wedding 40 years ago. It's got to be so. I'm very sorry to report that, but anyway, we send our love and condolences to the Karshes and to the Kara Georges. And I just weirdly think that somewhere upstairs in heaven, Mrs. Karsh sent me Elliot Talenfield to be a guest on my show. How is it that two people grew up down the road from me? How, you know, he is older than me, Elliot, you know, but it's a very interesting story, and we're going to talk about it. We are going to talk about it. So let me just give you some more show news before we begin and before I bring up my guest. Perfect. Okay. Hi, Stephen. There's my lovely friend, Stephen. Hi, Tony, Linder. Hi, people from Pittsburgh. This is your show. I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Pittsburgh PA on it. There we go. I'm a Pittsburgh girl. And so is my guest. He's a Pittsburgh boy. We grew up nearby neighborhoods, Jewish neighborhoods. Okay, so if you want to call in the show today and speak to my guest, let me give you the call-in number because I'm in London. Okay, we need to give you the code to America, which is 001. So if you're outside of the USA, you dial the code first, 001. And then it's 858-956-3204. Okay, and if you want to speak to my guest. Now, I'm going to just thank last week's guest before we dive in. And that's the adorable, wonderful, glamorous, beautiful healer and makeup artist and stars, Miss Jackie Shawn. Jackie has been not only a friend of mine for 30-some years, but she was originally how we met is she was a student of mine. She studied metaphysics with me, and she's an extremely astute woman. She's a goddess, really. I like to refer to her as a goddess. And she got very sick with multiple chemical sensitivity, which is everywhere now. We're all being toxically poisoned, I must say, because it's true. And Elliot has messaged me. Elliot, I'll bring him up. Elliot, your mic is on now. I'm going to be with you in 1 second, okay?
Okay, but I'm hearing double. You're coming in twice.
Oh, that's not good. Really?
Yep.
Okay, I don't know why that is.
Okay, all right.
That could be because I'm live streaming on the... Okay, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stop the live stream on... If that's the case, see, that's what I need to know. Let me just ask Let me ask, is anyone hearing me double on Facebook? Facebook? Stephen Silver, are you hearing me double? Am I coming through twice? Is there an echo? See, this is what happens when you do that. Okay, hold on, Elliot. I'm going to fix it. Just a minute. You know, right. Oh, there's, okay, no chat on Blog Talk Radio. CR Bulls 56, yes. I have something in hearing. Okay, hold on. Hold on a second. So I want to find out, CR Bowles, can you hear me? Can you hear me properly? Okay, when she tells me yes or no, I'll know what to do. Okay, it may be that you need to call again. Elliot.
Click in how?
Okay, so you hang up and you do everything you just did again. And see if that straightens it out. Can you do that?
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can figure that out. Let me try.
Okay.
Cafe Esoteric.
How did you do it the first time? Just hang up and call back in. That's pretty much
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm going to click on end call here, and then I'll call back in.
Okay, that's great. Okay, and then we'll get the show started. Yes, he's hung up. Okay, we need to have that clear because that will be the bit that's recorded. Okay, yes, no chat on BTR. Well, I don't know why that is. I opened the chat room. Chat room is open on Blog Talk Radio. Oh, these are the days that try you, honest to God. Hey there. Hi, Tony. Right. Can you hear me okay? Do I come through all right? We need to know. We're having some technical difficulties. Let's see if Elliot can get back in. Right. Meanwhile, I'm going to go over here. Oh, there he is. Let's see. Elliot, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you okay.
And any echoes? Do you hear me twice?
Yes, I'm hearing you twice.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. I'm going to have to cancel one of these. So I think I'm going to cancel the live stream on YouTube because that's what's wrong. There's three things going on at once. Okay, YouTube, you're going to have to just wait, and I'll restart you up on my other laptop. I'm ending this because it's taking up too much of the mic. That's what's happening. I've got three. The mic is using two or three things. Can't do it. So I'm going to end that. Let's come off that and see if it helps. Okay. Is that, Elliot, has that helped?
Let me see if it repeats. I heard you say, "Is that has that helped?
Has that helped?
Yep.
I've come off that mic.
Yes. I.
Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay, Elliot?
I can hear you okay, but I'm still hearing you twice.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I don't know why that is. It could be, you know, are you calling from Skype? What are you using to call in?
And then after a delay, I'm hearing myself again.
Yeah, there's something, it could be the equipment you're using. Do you want to just call in the phone number? You'll be calling, I hate to say this, you'll be calling San Diego if I give you the call-in number and see if that makes a difference.
All right, I will give that a try.
Okay, the call-in number is the same as any guest. It's 858 area code 956-3204. Do you want to hang up and call me back on that? Here's someone. Hold on. Before you hang up, just a minute. Caller 602, can you hear me okay? Caller 602.
Me?
Just a minute,
me.
Elliot. Oh, that's you?
Yeah, I'm 602.
Okay, I'm hanging you up on the other one. Okay, let's see if you get through here. Okay, now, 602. That's you, Elliot.
That's me. And I'm speaking to you through my phone now.
Okay. Does that sound better?
Well, I'm not. Do you want me to listen through the headphones?
Whatever you want, as long as you
second.
Can hear me without it repeating.
Yes, I can hear you without it repeating through my phone.
Oh, amen. Thank God. That's all we need.
But the question is, if I just speak into my phone, will they hear me?
I hear you fine. You can put them
great,
on.
Then. I'll just use the phone.
I hear you fine. Okay. And if I can hear you, they should be able to hear you. That's really.
All right, then
the
I'm just going to treat this as a phone conversation and put aside my headphones.
Yeah, that's all you need to do, really. That's it.
Okay.
To be honest.
Sounds good.
I would like to get my YouTube up, but okay, I'm just going to go on with the show.
Okay.
In the old show busy story, it's time to go on with the show. So I was mentioning Jackie Shawn, who was my guest last week, a lovely woman who has had multiple chemical sensitivity. Makeup is very bad. You know, it's got loads of stuff in it that shouldn't be on women's skin or anyone. And so, you know, people are getting sick from it. So now we want to urge women to check out organic things and take care of themselves better and all that other good stuff that we try to do on this show. And what happens is, I'm just going back on my other computer that's finally sorted itself out. But what happens is that, you know, she is the person you can go to get information about this. So JackieShawn.com, I want to give her a plug again, my last guest. Now, coming up next week, we have a naturopath because we're on the health kick. You know, we do everything here, mind, body, spirit, right? And so my next guest for next week is a naturopath, and her name, I will give it to you right here, is... Oh, God, hold on, is the lovely Maria, Dr. Maria Cronin. Okay, now I've done everything. Before we have any time left for the show. Let me just mention there are upcoming metaphysics classes starting. Hello, David. Hello, Mark in the Facebook. Upcoming Monday, September 16, 2019, from 7 p.m. UK, 2 to 4 p.m. EST, 11 to 1 p.m. and worldwide, I am offering 11-week online tarot course as well. So it's 12-week metaphysics, which begins the following day, Tuesday, the 17th. If you're interested, please get in touch with me, okay? You can catch me here on everything going, okay? But obviously, Facebook or my website or Cafe Esoterica at cafeesoterica@gmail.com. And finally, this is the last thing I need to do before I bring up Elliot, who is my guest today. I'm just going to get us live over there. Let me introduce my guest with a roaring. he's a cantor, but he's also an author. He was a lawyer. His story is amazing. He wrote a book called Through a Still Imperfect Lens, which invites the reader to accompany him on an intimate and unflinching journey into the dark and uncharted topography of the human soul. The book is a passionate, inspired amalgam of New Age spirituality, Eastern mysticism, an intense Talmudic from the Talmud, self-examination, combined with the psycho-spiritual philosophies of self-actualization promoted by Maslow, Rogers, and Martin Buber. The author, using his own life as a template, bravely attempts the reconciliation of transactional and transformational approaches to human relationships. He brings his heart to the slaughter and his best bone to the fight. The book is engaging and easy to understand, offering ample rewards for the thoughtful and discerning reader. It has certainly inspired me. And that was a review by Gary Binkowski, that's off his website, which is, and I'll give you all the proper information in just a second, which is through www.stillimperfectlens.com. Welcome, author and cantor, Elliot Talenfield. At last!
Hi, Sean. It's nice to be with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here with you. Well, welcome, fellow Pittsburgher. Isn't it amazing?
What a coincidence.
I know. What a coincidence. So let's tell the audience, because they don't know our story. They don't know your story. They might know a little bit about my story, but your story is very, very interesting indeed. So you were raised on Mellon Street in Pittsburgh, right?
Yes.
Okay. And
about a block and a half away from B'nai Israel on Negley Avenue.
Yeah, I was raised on Rosecrest Drive in Stanton Heights. That's about another four blocks away, really. It's not that far at all. And you were raised Jewish.
Yes, I am still Jewish.
You're still Jewish, I know, but I mean, I'm just going back to the history, right?
Okay.
And yeah, I prepared some questions, of course. That's what every good interviewer does, because I was looking at your website, and it's a very profound website. I urge people to go there. Let me talk
about...
There's
a picture at the back of... there's a chapter called When God and I Were on a First Name Basis. It's chapter one of the book, and there's a picture of me all dressed up in my best shul clothes. At the beginning of the chapter, and at the end, there's a picture of the synagogue itself, which is a grand kind of Moorish structure on Negley Avenue that's still there today. Unfortunately, the synagogue is closed.
You know, that was a beautiful synagogue. It was really stunningly beautiful, B'nai Israel. And, you know, my first experiences really of going to synagogue were there. And
mine too.
And you know, I don't know why it closed, except that a lot of people moved out of those neighborhoods. And a lot of
well, sure.
Jewish
that's
people.
That's what happens. It's a demographic trend around the country. People are moving
yeah.
to the suburbs, and the inner city synagogues are closing.
When was the last time you were there?
I was in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. I still have family in Wheeling, West Virginia, and my wife has family in the city. So we go back every now and then for family occasions.
And
but
were
I last
you not...
sang at the
yeah,
Israel
sang yeah.
back in 1995. I think it was about the last service that they held there in the main sanctuary before they closed it down. And
yeah.
our friend Clarine Karsh was there with her husband. And it was quite a privilege to daven there as a visiting cantor on that final occasion.
Yes, I can imagine. That would be quite a special occasion, very special indeed. You know, she was, just to talk about Mrs. Karsh for a second, she was, my greatest memory of her, I must be honest, is in her kitchen. In her kitchen. She had kids, every one of her kids had a kid over that was like another member of the family. And, you know, everybody was a family. They weren't just friends. You were automatically another kid of hers. And
she reached out to young kids. She purposely included, I mean, when I started singing in her choir, I must have been about 10 years old. And, of course, there were professional quality adult singers all through the age spectrum in that group. But it was important to her, I think, to have a mixed group like that and involve the kids at an early age.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, that was our first exposure to music, as well as to the synagogue liturgical stuff.
And she was an opera singer in her career, and she had a beautiful voice, really powerful, beautiful voice. And my memories of her singing, not just in shul, but and directing the choir, which she did and did so beautifully, but at home with the family singing Summertime. When she sang that, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Beautiful rendition of Summertime. So, you know, we're dedicating this show. We both agreed we're dedicating this show to her. She was a fine human being. You couldn't ask for a better friend. I went through some rough times, and she really gave me a lot of support in my youth. And I will always love her, always. I will always care about her. You know, these are very special people. And people who care, it's like the old song, people who really care about other people, you know. And she was very deeply caring about many things. I'll tell you one quick story about her, and then we'll move on. I was going through an interesting patch around 2004 or 5, and I had lost touch with the people who I was so connected to, because I've lived a long time in the UK, you know, and I, you know, it was just a very weird set of circumstances where I was in an area near where I live called West Hampstead, and I was up there because I had some problems with a tooth, and I was at my dentist, and she numbed me up, and she said, go take a walk and come back, right? So I walked across the street. There was like a thrift shop there, and I thought, oh, what's in there? Let's have a look. And there were these beautiful Chagall windows done in, you know, in the hand stitching. What's it called? Oh, Mrs. Karsh did needlepoint. Thank you. Needlepoint. That's it. That's the word. And I got this. I was standing outside this window and looking at these, and they were exactly the way Mrs. Karsh had done hers. And I remember when she did them all. She did every last one of them. I think there's 12. And she used to say to me, what do you think of the colors, Shawnee? Do you like these colors? And I'm like, yeah, they're beautiful. And every stitch, perfect, you know. And when I saw those, I literally felt her next to me. And I heard her say, because I am a medium, I heard her say to me, tell all my kids, and she emphasized all my kids, that I love them. And I was so surprised. I looked down and I saw these needle points and I thought, my God, nobody else that I ever knew in my whole life did these except her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I got back in touch with her daughter and her son, Kenny, and I said, look, your mother came to me. And, you know, right then, not long after that, Harriet passed away, which was her other daughter. So it was like, and this time now, Paula's husband passed away. I mean, this is not coincidence. Do you know what I mean? This is, she always knew I was psychic and she always supported me. She used to say to me, Shawnee's got the shine.
That's cute.
And that was the way she was. She never would say that was rubbish or crazy, you know, like I heard in my own house. She would say, so this is the kind of woman we're talking about. And I would not be surprised if she set this up for us to let her family know that she's there in all these difficult times, you know, and good times too. Okay, Elliot, let's go back to your story. Your story is amazing. And I just want to go back to, I'll tell you the first question. How did you begin your journey into more than just being a nice Jewish boy? What made you come to the belief that you needed to be more? And what was your nickname for God, which I know, but the audience doesn't. So if you can start us off there.
Well, I suppose my search starts in chapter one when I'm, you know, 8 or 9 years old. And
nice.
I begin the text of that chapter, even in English. Oh, Lord, our God and God of our fathers was a mouthful for a 9-year-old.
Yes.
So feeling certain we knew each other well enough to dispense with such formality, I decided to give God a nickname, something we'd keep between the two of us. And in an emergency, God forbid, he would also know right away that it was me. Our covenant in those days was just that personal and straightforward, simple enough for a child to understand. My job was to behave. Is to make sure only good things happen to my family and me. And that being the whole point, it occurred to me to use the initial letters of all our first names to form an acronym. With two parents and three siblings, I had four consonants and two E's to work with. And so, like an invisible med alert bracelet, I bound him for a sign around our wrists. Jeffler is our God. In emergency, call Jeffler.
That was my outlook
as a youngster. And, of course, the synagogue, B'nai Israel, that we were talking about went perfectly with my sort of childish approach. It was a grand and mysterious place. You remember that it had the entryway was a curved, long hallway that felt as you entered to like you were making a pilgrimage up to the main sanctuary, especially for those with little or tired old legs. It felt like climbing up Mount Zion. And then at the top, you would see this cavernous hall with a high domed ceiling and huge chandeliers twinkling brightly from up above. And then down a long center aisle, the rich mahogany ark, resplendent with gold-painted lions, rose up 25 feet from the dais. And hidden behind its sliding wooden doors, then a...
Hello? Elliot? Oh, my God, we lost you. Elliot? The call got dropped, Elliot. Okay. We have some activity while Elliot's calling us back. Light Witch has joined the chat room. Hello, people in the chat on Blog Talk Radio. Hello, chatters. And I have, hello, I am back here on YouTube. Thank you. I'm sorry we had to end that one and put it on another one. I'm talking over here. Your camera can't see me, but I'm on another thing. Elliot, call back. Elliot, where are you? Call back. Let's hope he's going to call back because he is my guest. Okay, well, while Ellie is sorting it out, how about we have a little break? We'll have a musical break. I did choose a lot of great songs from Fiddler on the Roof. Why not? And here we go with Tradition. Speaking of the cantor, speaking of the little boy in the synagogue. Here we go. By Zara Mostel.
Fiddler on the Roof. Sounds crazy, no? But in our little village of Anitefka, you might say, every one of us is a fiddler on the roof, trying to scratch out a pleasant, simple tune
Hello.
Without breaking his neck. It isn't easy.
I'll get you in a minute, okay?
You may ask,
hang on.
Why do we stay up there if it's so dangerous? We stay because Anitefka is our home. And how do we keep our balance? That, I can tell you in one word, tradition. Tradition! 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 Traditions we've kept our balance for many years. Here in Anitefka, we have our traditions for everything. How to eat, how to sleep, how to work, even how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered, and we wear these little prayer shawls. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know. But it's a tradition. Because of our traditions, everyone here knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Whole day and night must scramble for a living, feed a wife and children, say his daily prayers, and who has the right as master of the house to have the final word at home? The Papa!
Oh,
In the circle of our little village, we've always had our many special types. For instance, Yenta the matchmaker.
Avram, I have a perfect match for your son. A wonderful girl.
Who is it?
Rachel, the shoemaker's daughter.
Rachel? She can hardly see. She's almost blind.
Tell the truth, Avram. Is your son so much to look at? The way she sees and the way he looks, it's a perfect match.
And Reb Nochem, the beggar.
Alms for the poor. Alms for the poor.
Here, Reb Nochem, here's one kopeck.
One kopeck? Last week you gave me two kopecks.
I had a bad week.
So, if you had a bad week, why should I suffer?
And most important, our beloved rabbi.
Rabbi, may I ask you a question?
Certainly, my son.
Is there a proper blessing for the Tsar?
A blessing for the Tsar, of course. May God bless and keep the Tsar far away from us.
Among ourselves, we've always gotten along perfectly well. Of course, there was a time he sold him a horse, but delivered a mule. But that's all settled. Now we live in simple peace and harmony.
It was a horse.
It was a mule.
It was a horse.
It was a mule.
It was a horse.
Tradition. Tradition. Without our traditions, our life would be as shaky as a fiddler on the roof.
Well, that was the most amazing Zero Mostel singing from Fiddler on the Roof, Tradition. And the reason that I went to it is because Elliot's phone dropped, his call dropped, and we had to just grab something there instead of nothing at all. So Elliot is now back, and he's waiting patiently. And hello, Elliot, can you hear me?
Hi, I can hear you, and I'm back, and I'm not sure where I was in the conversation when it dropped, but
well,
I think
that's
I have
okay.
Begun to...
We were going to do that song anyway, but we're just running late because of technical difficulties, so I just threw it in there. And the reason I threw it in there is, A, Fiddler on the Roof. First of all, Mrs. Karsh did that in the synagogue, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, that play, that they put on a play, I think, there, Fiddler on the Roof, when it came out. But also, it really describes every Jewish person's heritage. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's the old story, isn't it? I took my daughter to see it here in London only a couple weeks ago, about a month and a half ago. So, you know, next generation understands. Okay, so let's go back to your story. We're talking about, you know, what you were talking about. I asked you about, and you were talking about your nickname for God. Now, as a child, right?
Sure. So as a child, you identify with all of the magistry and the pageantry and the mystery and the stories and so on. But as you go through adolescence, for most of us at some age or other, we reach a certain cognitive dissonance between that and our routine daily experience of life and reality. So by the time I was in law school, I was, you know, a little bit disillusioned with my tradition, not certainly a regularly observant Jew. And I picked up a copy of a famous book by Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi, which, as it turns out, is familiar to many people, and oftentimes I hear that that was the book that got them started as well down the sort of metaphysical pathway. Are you hearing me
now,
okay?
Yes, and I was just going to say that's such an important point that I want to just stop you for a second. I had that written here, and on the way to becoming who you are, when did you realize your need for esoteric knowledge, and how did you seek it? Well, there's the answer. And then, you know, the New Age, the psychics, the mystical knowledge, of course, the Kabbalah. We're going to talk about all those things because they're really relevant to your story. And they're relevant to our show. Our show is about mind, body, spirit, metaphysics, spiritual seeking, you know, all that, holistic medicine. So, okay. So, wow. That book was extremely popular somewhere around the late 60s. Is that about the same time? Early
70s? It would have been, late 60s, early 70s when I read it.
Yeah.
I heard
an
interesting story about that, by the way. In posting excerpts from my book on Facebook, I've gotten to meet people from all over. And there was a fellow in New York who was fairly high up in the Self-Realization Fellowship organization.
Yeah.
And I got to have coffee with him and share stories. But he told me that when that book first came out, Yogananda had a very hard time getting anybody to publish it, and went knocking on doors for a long time before it was finally published. And of course, it went on to become a famous bestseller that's still in print and still selling them. But that book moved me. It was the life story of Yogananda, and there was something so personal about it that I could identify with his humility and his aspirations for God and so on. And it was sometime after that, I was a student at, I was already in law school, but there was a young guru who was making the scene, about a 14-year-old kid from India. In the book, I call him Devaji, Guru Devaji. And I was invited, I'll tell you an interesting story. I had sat down, I had been doing yoga and practicing transcendental meditation, which was all the rage then as well. And one day I was sitting there meditating deeply, I thought, and taking long yogic breaths. And I began to ask myself a question like, well, I wonder if any of that stuff I've been reading could really be true. Because Yogananda's message was that we can all have a direct inner experience of God. It doesn't just have to be an idea or a thought process.
Yes.
And I remembered in that meditation that Yogananda had written about how his guru had appeared to him in meditation. And that's how he knew. It was a kind of a sign. And so I started fantasizing to myself, I wonder if such a thing could happen to me. And I wonder if I could ask. And, you know, this was for a Jewish intellectual, the very idea of having a direct experience of God or a conversation with God is alien. I'm sad to say. I'm sure that's not true for Hasidim and perhaps Orthodox people, but for most of us, it's a very intellectual process. And so it almost seemed Christian to me to think of praying and opening my heart and asking for a direct experience of God. But I said to myself in the middle of this meditation, well, no one's looking. What have I got to lose? And I said, God, if you're out there somewhere and you want to send me a guru or a sign that I can trust is from you, I'm open. I'm ready to hear it. And, you know, it's very much like the stories many Christians tell, I'm sure, about their sort of acceptance of Christ moment. But this is what I said in the meditation. And then that night I got up and went over to visit a cousin who was in from England, interestingly enough.
Interestingly enough.
I didn't know him. I hadn't met him. And it turns out he was on his way to Houston, where this young guru was holding a festival. And all he wanted to do was tell me about this wonderful guru of his and all the wonderful things he was experiencing. And, of course, I was struck by the timing and the coincidence of this coming so close on the heels of my prayer request. for some direction and guidance. And as I was leaving that evening with my cousin, he handed me a magazine with a picture of the guru on it. Now, I left out an important part of the story. As I was meditating, I tried to conjure up some symbol or token that God might show me that would let me know that I was now receiving this direction or this message. And the image came to my mind during the meditation of a large red flower. I tried to imagine a guru walking towards me, and he had a large red flower on him to distinguish him. And, of course, during that meditation, I can't say that this was a profound experience. I was very much feeling like I was just sort of making stuff up or stream of consciousness. But after my meeting with my cousin, I got home, and a few days later, I had tossed the magazine that he had given me about the guru on my coffee table. And I'm sitting there, and it was almost as though somebody from standing behind me took hold of my head and raised it up to an angle in which it was focusing on the picture on the cover of that magazine. And on that picture was the guru wearing an enormous red carnation on his lapel. Now, I had never had an experience like that, but it just, of course, to a seeker and somebody who wanted to have some direct input from God, and of course there was a lot of ego, I'm sure, involved in that as well. It was a profound moment, and so I began to engage with this group of followers of this guru who would hold regular evening satsang programs. And once again, I was so impressed when I went to these by the of the speakers, who were youngsters all the way up to people in their 80s. And there was no responsive reading. There was no script or agenda for the nightly program. But we would all be sitting in this hall together meditating. And whoever felt moved by the spirit, so to speak, or by the guru, would stand up and approach the microphone. And I listened to these young people, many of them Jewish, articulate spontaneously, extemporaneously, the most inspiring and heartfelt, loving message about their experience with this guru. I was just blown away by it, because I had never heard that kind of heartfelt, passionate, and spontaneous communication in synagogue. I mean, let's be frank. I heard a lot of responsive reading. I heard a lot of sermons that seemed largely to be read word for word from notes. And here were these people of all kinds of education levels and ages just stepping up and singing the praises of this guru in a totally heartfelt and inspiring way. And I was hooked. I mean, I found myself just waiting till evening came so I could go to these satsang programs to be uplifted. And I must say that at that time in my life, I had a little bit of a grudge. I sort of held it against my Jewish mentors in a way that they had settled for so much less, in my estimation, based on my experience at that time, than this kind of direct and impassioned personal experience of spiritual life and reality and God. And so I went down that path and continued it for several years and did my meditations and so on. But as I described in the book... Sure.
Your book, can I just tell our audience, because, you know, we got chopped and changed here a bit. So my guest today, if you haven't heard, is Cantor Elliot Kallenfeld, who's also the author of his memoirs, his spiritual memoirs, which are called Through a Still Imperfect Lens, which you can get it on Amazon or his website. Still, which is all the W's, stillimperfectlens.com. Now, Cantor Kallenfeld grew up in Pittsburgh, around the corner from me, literally, and we both went to the same shul, the same synagogue, He was the junior cantor there, who later became a full-on cantor. And also, he's a lawyer, and you're also a counselor. Are you a psychotherapist, Elliot?
Yes, I spent most of my career actually not as a cantor, but as a lawyer. I did work at a synagogue in Phoenix for about 6 years, almost full time as a cantor. But at the same time, I was practicing law in a large law firm. So I've always kind of worn multiple hats. But it was late in my career that I decided to go back to school. And I took a 2-year degree in mental health counseling. I just found that I had developed such an interest over the years in how people communicate and in the relationship between spirituality and psychology and psychotherapy that I wanted to get a credential and try that out. And I had already also been married for 25 years to a credentialed therapist. And so through all of that, I wanted to actually learn that, that trade, and it was a good experience, and I practiced for several years with an organization in Phoenix that counsels drug offenders who have been required to attend a certain number of therapy sessions for substance abuse. So I got that exposure as well.
That's a really excellent. I mean, that's a what a mishmash, but very, you know, of excellent qualifications, really. I think I want to go back, if you don't mind, Elliot. I'd like to go back and touch upon, you know, the craving or the longing for God is very strong for some people. I can't say it's strong for everyone because you don't see that reflected in the world, do you? But for some people, it is extremely powerful. And I think for go on.
Go ahead. You had. Go ahead.
Well, my question, because you clearly are and were a spiritual seeker at a very young age, when you found, to a lot, and I need to say this because I have a big, first of all, I'm half Jewish. My mother was Catholic. My father was Jewish, but we were raised Jewish. Okay. Figure out a bas mitzvah, you know, the whole schmear. And I identify as Jewish. I will say that. I may look like my mother's side, but I definitely identify as Jewish. And but my spiritual seeking, was really outside of the Jewish thing. And I have great friends I grew up with who I love dearly, who are very Jewish, committed to Judaism. Judaism is the thing. But when I stepped outside of the Jewish sort of parameters, I found so many people in spirituality, metaphysics, New Age, who actually were Jewish.
Yes.
And this is the thing I wanted. Yeah, go on.
Well, I think we have been so on the vanguard of these New Age movements. I mentioned that so many of the followers of this guru were Jewish in their upbringing. I went on to get involved in the next decade or so with a channeler, a psychic medium, who was married to a Jewish man who had been a protege of Werner Erhard, who started the EST
program. I did it.
Okay.
California.
All right.
Yeah,
so then you know how many of those leaders had a Jewish background, because I think many of us were seeking a more direct, in the moment experience of something that we call God than we were finding in our Jewish environment, and that's a sad commentary.
But that's really,
I think that's borne out by the statistics of what's going on with Judaism today and with the demographics of how many have left.
This is so important. I know your book. We're going to get to your book and talk more about it. But this is a really important point, because people today, what I found in my own search was that it all led me back to the Kabbalah, which is essentially Jewish, it's Jewish mysticism. But that doesn't mean that the Jews are right and everyone's wrong. You know, that's not going to help be helpful on any level. But I do think that, you know, Baba Ram Dass, you know, was Jewish. Some of the major players, Bob Dylan, Jewish. You know, very major players who were brought about a consciousness. If you say Bob didn't bring about a consciousness, that's wrong. Because the person who wrote How Many Roads Must a Man Walk Down Before You Call Him a Man is, that is extreme higher consciousness, you know? I think the whole consciousness movement, and this is just my feeling from doing this work for many decades myself, I just feel we're all looking for something. And we're looking for something that tells us God is there. God hears us. God helps us. God wants us. God loves us. And that we mean something to God. More than just mean something to God.
And in my experience going through these various spiritual paths, I did meditation, I did yoga, I did the guru, I did the channeler, I lived in a spiritual new age community, and still I was an intellectual, I was an attorney, my mind remained fully engaged, and I remember experiencing an almost schizophrenic conflict, really, between the one group, the spiritual seeker group, who would look at me and see a pinstripe suited lawyer and accuse me of coming from my mind rather than my heart, and then in the intellectual circles, if I went to my law firm, of course, there I looked like a new age freak, not in appearance, but in my identification with channelers and so on. And my partners would ask if I had heard from any higher authorities lately, as a reference to citations in a brief of higher authority. So I felt like I was uniquely situated to bring these two worlds together. And one of the things I write in my book is that the heart, the so-called heart, and the so-called mind no more need to vie with each other or compete with each other than do the liver and the kidney. They perform different functions. They complement one another, and we need them both. So we mustn't throw out the baby with the bathwater as we reach for spiritual direct experience of God, our aliveness and awareness and our fuller consciousness, whatever you want to call it. That doesn't mean that we can't be responsible people, thinking people. And so what I found, unfortunately, and this is what I described throughout my book, is that in each of these spiritual paths I went down, there came a point of divergence between me and that guru or that so-called spiritual community, because, as often is the case in spiritual movements, ego comes in, power and control come in, conflict comes in, and then you're led to question, well, how can this be so spiritual? I'll tell you an interesting story if you don't need to stop me for a break.
Elliot, I want to stop. I'm so sorry, but we need to take – we always take a break at the top of the hour. I know we got a little bit behind. We had a little break with the tradition. I'm going to just – I have to give people this time to run to the bathroom, do what they need to do.
Okay.
And it's
all right,
a two-minute
song. I'll pick up with
song.
That story afterwards.
We'll pick up on that, and I also want to use, and let's, I have it in my notes, soulmates. I want to talk about soulmates, which you've written about, and much more. We'll be back, everyone, with Cantor, author, Elliot Talenfield, who is from Pittsburgh, my hometown. And that's his hometown, too. He doesn't live there anymore, neither do I, but we both have strong connections. Now, I'm going to play, because we're on the theme of so many things, spiritual, Jewish, Jerusalem by Neil Diamond, a nice Jewish boy from the jazz singer, which of course was done in 1980, and he was a cantor in that too. So here we go, 2 minutes, 53 seconds. We'll be back. Did you like that song, Elliot?
Sure.
From the jazz singer. Have you seen? You must have seen that with Neil Diamond. He's a cantor.
I don't know if
he
I
wants
actually
to be a rock
did,
star.
To be honest. But I know that, and that story is repeated with that story is the story of Al Jolson and how many others that grew up in the same environment we've been discussing. But I wanted to get back and finish this story, if it's all right with you.
Please do.
About the conflict between so-called head or mind and heart.
Yes.
So I had these incredible experiences in meditation, following the directions of the guru that had initiated me into his particular process of meditation.
Mm.
And when the end came, which in that case was one night at satsang, they announced that he was no longer going to be our satguru, and they were going to just transition from this whole Eastern Indian mystical environment to a more secular one, where he would bill himself as a humanitarian leader and teacher, which is fine, but it was a big disappointment to those of us who had been promised some kind of spiritual future with him as a direct intermediary for us. And I know that's not at all Jewish, and it was a very hard thing for most of us to accept. But when he changed direction on us, and many of us were disillusioned at that point, for a few years, I was bereft. I felt directionless. And then a fellow law professor, I was on a law faculty at that time teaching, told me about a psychic healer that he had been going to, who was a Jewish woman. And I sort of was a little bit burnt out with the whole spiritual seeker trip, and for a while resisted his invitation to introduce me to her. But finally, my curiosity got the better of me again. And I went to visit and to get to know and begin to work with this lady who lived in a little suburban neighborhood outside of Los Angeles, and was the most amazing psychically gifted woman. I remember the first time I went to see her, I sat down on lay down on her couch, and she put her hand above my forehead, and the feeling of heat coming out of her hand was so pronounced that I literally insisted on looking up her sleeve to see if she had a flashlight or some other source of energy that I was feeling. And during the course of my work with her, one of the things that came up, it was almost like being in therapy in the sense that we would talk about my life and my issues, conflicts. But unlike a regular therapist who would, you know, gauge where you were coming from based on your language and the words that you chose and so on and so forth, this lady would see my aura shifting and make observations that were coming from a different source, not available to your routine psychotherapist. Mm. So one of the first issues I raised with her was my sense of disappointment with the guru. And I said, how can it be that God would respond to my sincere request and prayer to show me a direction and lead me down this, what turned out to be a primrose path, which I never would have taken if it weren't for the so-called signs and wonders that I experienced along the way. That meditation that I was so blissed out in, that red rose, that carnation that showed up, and so on and so forth. And in the book, I described quite a few more dramatic personal experiences that had reconfirmed for me that I was on the right path with this guru. And I said, but now that this has all come to naught, how can I not reject the whole spiritual search, the whole process, in light of these contradictions? And this lady, psychic, paused, went silent for a few minutes, and said, well, you know, I don't think you're going to like what he just told me. And by he, she was referring to, I guess, one of my spirit guides or something that she could see or hear or whatever. And I said, come on, Sarah, out with it. What did he tell you? And she said, well, what he said just now in response to your question was, even a flower needs shit to grow. And that was going to be the title of my book originally, Even a Flower Needs Shit to Grow.
That's funny.
She captured so
That's
much
really
in that statement. And I think my whole growth process has been one of separating the shit, pardon my phraseology, from the actuality of whatever spiritual experiences or insights we pick up along the way, so that we can basically integrate the heart and the mind, the spiritual and the worldly, and become whole without choosing to reject one world in favor of the other. So many of us either choose to be down to earth, you know, lawyers, doctors, dentists, whatever, breadwinners, and everything else is rationed to a sort of a token weekly church or synagogue attendance or something like that. And then the other camp is those who go to the extreme of disassociating from the practical world and running off to join, you know, one movement or another and renounce worldly concerns. I think we've got to do both, and we've got to find a way to integrate them, and that's really what my book is all about.
Okay, it's a very, very interesting dynamic that you went through, and I think you know, anyone who's a spiritual seeker of any kind would ask the sanest question in the world, you know, why me? Why did that happen to me if you care about me, you know? And I have it in here, so I might as well go there. I wasn't going to go there yet. I wanted to go to soulmates. But let's go to the old, why did the Holocaust happen? If you care about me, let's go to some of these profound questions, because I know they're in your book, you know, and I know that people are, you know, that now we have Holocaust deniers, which is even worse, you know, that's the worst of it. But
sure,
how can you have faith? I mean, I have faith, okay, but I've been a spiritual seeker since I was really a young girl, okay? And how, and even I question my faith, and I'm 63 years old, so that's a lot of years looking for God, you know? Sometimes I have profound experiences, which are mind-blowing. Other times I have, like, you know, what are they out to lunch? They're not even answering the call, you know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right. I do know what you're saying.
Yeah. So how can that, why is it so inconsistent, do you think?
I don't have an answer to that, Sean. I really don't. But I think that we have to not conclude from that inconsistency that that our profound and wonderful and uplifting and transcendent experiences that we have when we have them are any less valid or real. Just because they're not sitting there at our beck and call, showing up whenever we would like to have such an experience. But that's you're right. That's the mystery, the question. I don't have answers for why bad things happen to good people. There's a whole book about that by a rabbi. What can I say?
Elliot, did Jews believe in karma?
Do Jews believe in it? I don't think so as such, but I sure do.
And do Jews believe in reincarnation? Which I had this discussion with my Israeli boyfriend many, many years ago, ex-boyfriend now, of course, many years ago. He told me that Jews believe in four different lives. I don't know. He went into this whole thing, and since you're a cantor, I'm going to ask you. I don't think Jews believe in reincarnation.
I'm not a scholar, though.
I'm not a scholar or a rabbi.
I can only tell you, I don't know most of the answers to these questions. Do we have past lives? I've had some past life experiences, some of which I describe in the book.
That's very interesting to me because I'm a past life regressionist myself. And that's very interesting that you had these experiences and you wrote about them, see? So, okay, so what I'm picking up and what I'm thinking here is that you are a soul, a person, who was brought up Jewish, and you love your Jewish religion. However, you wanted more. You wanted a personal connection to God. And you sought
it. That's true.
And everything
that's
that,
true. I sought it wherever I could find the crumbs or the hints or the so on. But I, you know, I kept my eyes open and I paid a high price for that search. There was a lot of disillusionment, a lot of disappointment. But my mantra to myself was, do not throw out the baby with the bathwater of what you have just experienced. Your job as a spiritual seeker, as a human soul, is to learn and grow and move on to the new circumstances with which your life presents you now and gradually, you know, reframe all of that experience so that it works, so that it fits, so that it makes sense in your present context as you move through life.
Beautiful.
And that's what I did through my marriages. You were asking about soulmates.
Yeah, let's
so
go
on
to soulmates, because you mentioned it in your book and it's on your website about soulmates. Do you believe in soulmates?
Well, not as not in the way that it was packaged by the in the spiritual community that I joined, which was premised on the idea of spiritual soulmates, and that this channeler or the entity that she channeled could identify who was with the right person or not with the right person. I lived for 25 years with a therapist who was declared to be my soulmate. And I don't want to give away too much of the story because it's it's the story part of the book.
Right.
But what I came away with from the experience is that we are together with whoever we're together as a part of our curriculum psycho-spiritually, mm-hmm. and that we learn and grow from what happens there and what we do. There was something came across my Facebook feed just the other day, and I was so struck by it that I reposted it. But it said, spiritual growth doesn't happen in meditation or on a yoga mat or in a synagogue or in a church. It happens when you're frustrated, angry, or scared, and you're doing the same old things you always did in response to it. And then suddenly a light goes on and you realize that you have a choice to do it differently. Now, that captures to me the whole psycho-spiritual process. We don't discover our spirituality in this tidily packaged religious environments that we create. And those are fine to help encourage us and inspire us and so on and so forth. But we find it in the kitchen, in the laundry room, in the bedroom, in the interactions that we have with those that are nearest and dearest to us. And one of the things I write in my introduction to the book, I say that my main hypothesis is that our significant others provide the relational laboratory and spiritual catalyst for both our emotional healing and our personal and spiritual growth. For it is in relationship that we find and raise up those scattered Kabbalistic sparks. Mm-hmm. And our love for those we hold most dear, when we allow ourselves to fully feel and express it, is the still imperfect lens through which we glimpse the face of God. So that's kind of the
wow.
premise of the book. And the cover picture of the Hubble telescope is a reflection of that. You might recall that when it was first launched, it was malfunctioning and pictures were all coming back blurred. And so they had to send some astronauts up to make some repairs in space on this Hubble telescope that now returns the gorgeous pictures, that one of which is posted on the front of my book. So in my, the metaphor is that my life, for me at least, I see it as a constant refining and repairing and improving of the lens through which we see life and reality, and in particular, our relationships with those we love.
Elliot, believe it or not, we only have a couple minutes left. I know it's ridiculous. It goes so fast, and we had our technical glitches, but you've been a wonderful guest, and I've learned so much from you. And I would love to invite you to come back. Maybe
sure.
another, we'll put you on again when we have, now that we've only touched the surface. And I think your work, I think what you're trying to get to people is extremely important. You know, it's just, when you've been on this ship that sailed, I've been on this ship a long time. My sea legs are firm, you know, and mm-hmm. I've met a lot of spiritual people along the way, some brilliant, genius, some complete phony balonies. They haven't a clue what it really means to be spiritual. And, you know, you're the real deal. You are a person who, through your heart, really sought God. That is a huge statement, because not a lot, I'm sorry to say this, it sounds so bitter, but it's true. From my experience, I have metaphysics students that don't seek God. You know, they want all the zhuzh, but they don't want the connection. And mm-hmm. I say that with love, you know, because I try to teach them the opposite, you know, seek God with all your heart, you know. And I think that it's extremely important for the message you have. And I sent a lot of, the link for the show on every Jewish Facebook site I could, because I think it's important to be, when we have traditional religion, and traditional religion is limited in certain ways, it's okay to want to be different. It's okay to want to expand your consciousness. it's okay to want to develop yourself further. And you don't regret any of your journey, do you?
No, I don't. I don't. And the other interesting theme in my, that my book goes into is the relationship between our spirituality and our psychological search and conflict.
Yes.
And the role of the therapist in our growth. And these days, a lot is being written about so-called psycho-spiritual integration. But that's another topic for another time.
We never talked about M. Scott Peck, and I just want to show my audience here. By the way, we have a new moon in Virgo coming up tomorrow. This is M. Scott Peck's book, A World Waiting to Be Born. Of course, his runaway bestseller was, excuse me, The Road Less Traveled, right? A Road Less Traveled. And you were pen pals. You were exchanging information back and forth. We don't even have time to discuss that. So, Elliot, when you come back, shall we discuss that and go from there?
All right, that's fine. And the correspondence between Peck and myself, which he filed with his final papers at the Fuller Theological Seminary, is posted on my website for anybody that wants to read that discussion that went on over a period of a decade or so with him.
Right. I would love to. I mean, it's on the website. I was peeking in and peeking out because I didn't have time to read it all. Okay. I'm going to just, we have a couple things. This question I can squeeze in very quickly. What is the female component of God in Judaism?
You're referring, I think, to the Shekhinah?
Yes. Yes, because right now there's a big movement for the divine feminine to be coming back and the patriarchy to be kind of, you know, backing off. And I think it's very interesting that we now have, you know, women rabbis and so on. So Judaism is embracing a lot of this. You know, do you think we might have more of this in the future?
Well, I think the things that we have identified with the feminine and the things that we identify with the masculine live in all of us and are part of us and need to be integrated. It's not a choice between one or the other. I think we have to embrace it all and integrate.
Spoken like a true therapist. Thank you so much, Elliot. You've been a wonderful guest. I am a little sorry that we had so many technical glitches, but you know, this is the way it goes. And I would just like to read out my In This Metaphysical Moment, and then we're going to go out with another song, a beautiful song from Fiddler on the Roof, which is Now I Have Everything. So folks, if you'll join me next week, we have the naturopath, which I mentioned. She's coming in. Her name is Dr. Maria Cronin. And so, thank you, Elliot. Thank you, everyone, for coming today. You're very welcome. Go to Elliot's website and get his book, Through a Still Imperfect Lens. And now I'm going to read In This Metaphysical Moment. Transformation. In the height of summer, you see all the beautiful winged butterflies flit by. They touch down lightly on the splay of multicolored flowers, infusing their goodness while receiving their own. It is nature doing what it does best, creating an interdependent connection for not only survival, but well-being. All species want and must evolve, but humans are born to evolve. Without morals, education, spiritual manna, the human race would probably die out or be so brutal, who would want to be in it? It needs connection, and it thrives best on spiritual connectivity. But the age-old question prevails. Which person speaks the truth for our enlightenment? Must we seek only one? How about many? Hundreds of thousands have come to this planet to share their vast spiritual knowing from previous lives. In India, this is the guru. In Zen Buddhism, this is the master. In Judeo-Christian religions, we do not speak of past lives per se. So what happens when you keep dreaming of one or feel compelled to go to another country, which is so achingly familiar to you? You must follow your dreams, visions, prompts for wholeness. Transformation comes in many forms, with many paths and many inner journeys along the way. Just like the etheric beauty of the butterfly's wings, filled with color to delight as we gaze upon it, we did not see the time spent in the cocoon, nor did we even consider it. But time she spent gestating before it could emerge, transformed as the miracle of a butterfly. In this metaphysical moment, cherish your transformations and all the road work, path work, sacred work, journaling, your spiritual education, cocooning, inspection, and inner vision brings you. For there is a higher purpose at stake. The butterfly transforms to feed the flower, and the flower gladly receives its sweet nectar. As humans must continue their own journey of growth for transformation and well-being, they must open their minds, hearts, and willingly partake. No one flower is enough, and no one idea can suffice. So I open my mind to whatever feels holy and positive to help feed my longing soul who craves divine wisdom, which leads to enlightenment and glorious transformation. That's it. We're out. Here we go with the song from Fiddler on the Roof, Now I Have Everything. And this is from the 2004 Broadway version. And good night. God bless. See you next week. Thank you, Elliot. Here we go.
Thank you.
I used to tell myself that I had everything, but that was only half true. I had an aim in life, and that was everything, but now I even have you. I have something that I would die for, someone that I can live for too. Yes, now I have everything. Not only everything, I have a little bit more. Besides having everything, I know what everything's for. I used to wonder, could there be a wife to share such a difficult, wandering kind of life?
I was on the outer.
Home will be.
I'll be with you in that home enough for me.
Everything is right at hand, simple and clear. I have something that I would die for, someone that I can live for too.
Yes!
Now I have everything, not only everything. I have a little bit more. Besides having everything, I know what everything's for.
And we're out. Thank you, everyone, for coming. See you next week. Take care. God bless. All the best. Bye now.